This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
We've got one missing. We don't know where he is, so we're not going to wait for him.
Oh, he's right over here. He came by earlier. He's in the closet.
Yeah. Don't make that joke.
Yeah.
Not that closet.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. We make fun of him about that. Because we've got a couple buddies that we make fun of them, say that they stalk a couple creators. They don't, like, stalk them. They just happen to go whenever they're, like, within 50 miles. and Ronnie's like, he's going to be that guy for you, Joe. So I'm going to warn you. If you ever go to Missouri, be careful.
I was just passing through Missouri last weekend.
Were you?
I was at Kansas City Comic Con.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's right.
How did that go?
It was fun. It was a moderate crowd, but a lot of people came by and talked to me, so it was always nice.
Nice.
And I had Paul Jenkins and Frank Barbary with me, and I made do.
That's pretty good company.
Nah, we had a good time.
I'm sure.
Now at Heroes Con, was that your kids you had with you?
That was five of my six kids and my wife with me.
Wow.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah, I have six kids, ages 20 to age 10.
Wow. So this is a family affair.
I guess so. Well, it was that weekend. They all like going to Heroes Con, so I just took them all with me. And a couple of them hung out with me at the booth and helped out, and everybody else just played.
Yeah, and that has to be extremely cool for them, because when I was a kid, my dad was like the HR manager of a grocery store chain, and I wanted nothing to do with going to work with him.
It's very similar to working at comics.
Gotcha. Oh, wait, here's Ronnie.
Yeah, he's coming. He said he's in the bathroom. That's his excuse.
Take your time, Ronnie.
Yeah, take your time, Ronnie. You know what? We're gonna get started with Adam, and then we'll make him feel bad when he comes.
Okay, sounds good.
I don't want to take too much of your time. Like, how much time do you have? Like 30 minutes, 45 minutes? That sound good?
Let's just do what we can and just not worry about it.
That works for me. This is the Aftershock Central Podcast, episode number 7. I'm Martin. Jack is here.
Hello.
Ronnie's MIA. So we figured if Ronnie's not here, we need somebody really good that knows Aftershock. So what better person than Joe Pruitt?
Hello, guys.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Doing good today. Thanks.
Thanks for taking the time off on a Sunday to hang out with us fools.
Not a problem at all. You guys have been very nice to Aftershock and me in particular, so it's the least I can do.
That's awesome. So I guess we can get rolling. Yeah, Jack? I'm going up the top of my head. Jack actually wrote some questions. I never prepare. So
I don't either.
I've known your work for a while. I know you were with like Caliber, and you had Desperado was your, I guess, your imprint image for a little bit. But how did you get rolling with Aftershock? How did that whole thing come about?
Strange enough, Aftershock came about back in my Desperado days. I had one of my Caliber projects optioned for film through Mandalay Pictures. Mm-hmm. And the executive at Mandalay, who was so interested in my character, Kilroy, is here at the time, was Lee Kramer, who is now the president of Aftershock Comics.
That's awesome.
And so when I was doing Desperado, when Desperado was kind of winding down, as you said, I had partnered with Image for a couple of years, went to solo for a couple of years, and partnered with IDW for about 5 years, give or take. It was kind of winding down, and I was thinking, what's the next course of action I want to do in comics? And at the time, what I had done is that me and a group of comic book creating friends, who I shall not name, but prominent creators in the business, we were actually kind of throwing about the idea of starting our own Image type comic, you know, a company that's owned by creators for creators, et cetera, et cetera. And so we were doing that for a little while, talking about that idea. And at the time, Lee had left Mandalay Pictures and started his own production company. And one thing I remember having a lunch with him a few months earlier in L.A., because I always had lunch with Lee when I went out to L.A., even after, you know, the Kilroy thing kind of went away. We still remained friends. I remember him saying that he helped raise finance for movies. So in the back of my mind just hit that one day. I said, hey, we have this new company. We need to raise some financing. Lee has left his company, and he might need some IP, so it might be a good partnership there. So so he came in, and we talked to a few people, financiers on and off for a couple, a year, 2 years. I'm not sure how long it was. And every time we thought we were right at the door to move forward, something would always happen at the last second. Usually when the financiers decide they want to do a hostile takeover of the company. Mm-hmm. And so we walked away from them. And so it went a couple of years where Lee and I were, kind of faded away from each other. And then I get a call from Lee one October and asked me if I was still interested in doing the comic book company. And Aftershock is what it became.
That's pretty awesome.
within like 5 or 6 weeks, the company was up and going.
Five or 6 weeks?
After that conversation, right. Wow. We didn't announce for another 5 months.
Sure, I guess.
But, yeah, we were there at the stage just getting everything going before the announcement came out.
Well, I mean, you were there, but you had to get some creators going, right? You've been in the business for quite a while, so I'm sure you had a pretty handy Rolodex with you.
Oh, sure. Like I said, I just started trying to start a company with a bunch of prominent creators, so, of course, I went out and grabbed a few of them. Again, not naming who it is. so that first month or so, that's what we did. I started reaching out to creators who I say, hey, we don't have the characters that Marvel DC does, so we definitely have to make our mark with creator names.
Right.
Reached out to the Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connors of the world, and the Paul Jenkins, who I share studio space with, so that makes it pretty easy.
See, that makes sense, because I know you and Paul work together. It was on Calibre, right?
Yeah, we worked at Calibre. Actually, Paul, a little known fact is that Paul was my first editor ever in comics when he was at Tundra. He was an editor at Tundra back in the day, and Kilroy, before the end of a Calibre, was at Tundra. And as Tundra kind of faded away, I think Paul's one who recommended us to Calibre to move the property there. And then Gary Reed, who was the owner of Calibre at the time, took it on, and then next thing I know, Gary and I know are still lifelong friends, and I started Negative Burn at Calibre, then started recruiting talent to them, bringing in, before I got to Calibre, it was kind of a place where you start your career, move on. My goal was to make it a place where you have your career and you come back and do your fun projects. So when I came to Calibre and eventually became the creative director, I reached out to the Garth Ennis's and the Mobius and the Alan Moore's and No Gaiman's and say, hey, come do your fun stuff here. And that was a fun time until the distribution wars killed us in like 97, 98. So reached out to Paul, reached out to Jimmy Amanda, reached out to Garth, reached out to Brian Azrael and got all them lined up. And strange enough, one of the first guys we were lining up back in the day was Warren Ellis. But then Warren had to back out at the time, but now we have Warren coming this year. So what comes around goes around.
Yeah.
And then of course, too, I realized that this is going to be a big deal and it wasn't going to be something that I could or wanted to do by myself. So I saw Mike Marks got involved. Mike was one of my editors back when I used to write X-Men comics back in the early part of the 2000s. And I always had a great relationship with Mike. And obviously, since that time, he had a pretty good run himself to become the X-Men group editor and then going to Batman group editor, then back to X-Men again. And I said, I'll reach out to Mike, and he'll probably tell me no, but it didn't hurt to ask. Like, that's my philosophy. I'm not afraid to ask anybody to do something.
Sure.
The worst they can tell me is no. So I reached out to Mike, and luckily enough, the conversation turned pretty well, and now he came on board with us.
Yeah, that's awesome. He's been around for forever, too. So that's one thing that we all enjoy. Like, you guys have such name recognition. I don't think there's a single book or single person working for the company whom I haven't heard of before Aftershock, right? Which I think says a lot, because the comic book market's tough, especially for a new publisher. You see them pop up all the time, but they're all very small. You guys are still small now, still, but there's that name recognition,
right?
At least for me. And especially once you pick up, one or two books, And then you start saying, oh, well, I know this person. I used to love them when they did so-and-so, you know, whatever it is. I know that's helped me spread the word a little bit within some of our friends. Because we all met through, like, Valiant Facebook groups, for example. I've been a Valiant fan for forever. And then, you know, Jack and Ronnie came along. And we've gotten a lot of people started reading Aftershock because of that. And so it's kind of nice to see, like, you know, I think the name recognition goes a long way. I think a lot of publishers maybe can't do that, and I'm glad that you guys are able to do that.
Well, it, like you said, it did get your attention, didn't it?
Yeah, oh so yeah, for sure.
It's not even just careers, like, no, even like, you know, bringing a Mike Martz on, boom, that was a big deal too. Right. We went one of Marvel's top editors to come, you know, work with us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I say no. No, actually, you mentioned about Valiant. No, Mike Martz used to be an editor at Valiant.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, and again, you know, we got the name recognition creators, but then we bring Mike in when he, you know, joined us as well, you know, as a partner. You know, Mike has his Rolodex, so you know he yeah. brought in the Marguerite Bennett's, and he brought in the Adam Glasses for us, and pretty much most every artist we have on our comics, you know, is somebody that Mike helped match up with the writers.
Right.
So. And then Mike, of course, became the editor-in-chief, and so, he runs most of the line in that regard for story and everything, and make sure everything runs on time. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think we got the name talent. We got the name editor-in-chief.
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, I don't know. So I met you at HeroesCon,
right,
which is actually held by a local comics shop called Heroes.
Yeah.
And so. Justin Cross, I don't know if you met him, but he's the manager over there. I was talking to him about you guys recently, and he's a guy who, like, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. And I think this is sort of a testimony to what you guys are doing, but, like, he's even been a little negative about Valiant when I've talked to him about them.
Sure.
But he had a ton of good stuff to say about you guys, and largely for what you guys are saying. He says when customers come in there, they see the name on the book, and they're already interested in it. So he doesn't have to do a lot of selling. He made it sound like you guys are, I guess from that aspect, are doing, for your size, are doing a lot of good things because of recognition.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm glad he's doing that.
And I guess a lot of comic readers, we like to follow creators.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Again, if you don't have the characters, and we don't have this, you know, 75, 80-year history behind us yet, so we don't have the characters that you know and love, so we have to have the creators you know and love instead.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll create new characters you'll know a lot.
I want to talk a little bit about Black Eyed Kids.
Okay.
Because I think right now that might be all of our favorites. It took
Shocked you want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to. It took Jack a little bit, but now he's warmed up, and I think it's his favorite. Ronnie thinks it's top 10 of all books that he's reading right now. So how'd you come up with the idea? Because I didn't even know about this until I started reading the book.
It's an urban legend that I had not heard about until a few years ago. And I don't know where I was probably trolling the internet and they came across these urban legends for different states. And I saw that and I said, what the hell is that? And I started looking into it and I said, that is so creepy that I know I had to write a story about it. So I did a little bit of research on it. And then I kind of backed off the research. I didn't want to be influenced too much by what other people are writing. I don't want to, you know, we consider I'm ripping somebody else off.
Sure.
There's actually a really good book about black-eyed children. Let me grab it. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
By David Weatherly. He sent me a copy of it too. I haven't read it yet, but I really want to. But I want to make sure I get my take on it down first before I start reading. But this is like true life events, stories of black-eyed children in real time. So I'm very fascinated to read that, but also I'm very afraid to read it because it might be really smart. So, but David's been a big fan of the book as well and supporting it, so that's great too. But yeah, it's just like an urban legend that it was so creepy and spooky and potentially, you know, like, no, it's Bigfoot, no, it's potentially real.
Sure.
That I hope I never meet one. So,
yeah. We all do now. We all hope that now, thanks to you, Joe.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I just want to do, like, you know, a real horror story without it being a slasher story. I try not to put gore into it. I'm not saying there won't be occasional, you know, in your face something here and there, which, but I don't like to do that. I'd rather do the Hitchcock type thing, which is more suggested than shown. But yeah, I'm having a great time writing it, and it actually writes itself. I mean, I might have an outline for, you know, a year's worth, but even today when I'm finishing up issue 7 script, I had a page I was writing at the end of scene, and the next I know I'd added, it became 3 pages, and the scene went someplace I wasn't expecting, but I liked it. I was like, wow, this is great. And I was, this is not what I intended to do, but it wrote itself. And I made it better in my mind. So hopefully you guys too.
Oh yeah, one thing I really enjoy is how cinematic it is. You know, every time we talk about this book, the one thing we bring up is, you know, Simon's pencils. Like, there's a lot of pages where there's very little dialogue, and it's very art heavy. And even though there are no words on that particular page, like, you can still tell exactly what's going on, right? You don't need somebody giving you the inner dialogue or the inner monologue or, you know, any captions or anything like that. Like, you know exactly what's happening. I think he's perfect for this book. I love the art style.
I love it. He's great. And as you said, it's like a movie to me. It's a movie in comics.
Yeah.
It's all mood. And he does such a great job of setting that mood that I don't have to really be concerned about that too much. And a lot of times I write scripts in the past. You know, the artists, and, you know, artists don't have their own interpretations of scripts sometimes. And I'm like, you just changed the whole mood of that page or that scene by doing this or that. And but Simon he never takes anything away from me. He actually adds to it. So it's been a perfect combination in my mind. I'm so glad he was available for me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
I don't want you to spoil anything, so you can avoid the question.
Okay.
I do. I'd like you to spoil some things.
But like, are we ever going to learn where these kids come from?
Yeah, I think you will. I'm not going to tell you when. Okay. But hopefully, it won't be for a long time.
That's fine. I like to speculate that it's aliens. But it doesn't have to be. I'm good with it not being aliens.
Well, yeah. If you go online and Google it, you'll see all the different speculations of what they are. So aliens is definitely one of the prominent ones that people are guessing.
Well, see, and the thing is, if you start researching like the myths, there are so many crazy people that are talking about the Black Eyed Kids that I just can't do it. You know?
Yeah, I try to avoid doing that. 'Cause I like my story better.
Yeah, I will say your story is by far the best thing I've read or seen with Black Eyed Kids, because I went out and like I try to find documentaries or like movies and things like that, and they're all just terrible.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of short films. I haven't watched either one that I've been told about.
Yeah, don't watch them. There's two on Amazon Prime. I know that.
Okay.
And they're both pretty bad.
Well, hopefully ours will be better.
Yeah.
Jack? You've got some questions.
Yeah, so Garrett Spellman, who's actually on the a big contributor on the Facebook fan group, has a question I thought was pretty good. He wanted to know, what do you look for most while finding an artist? And do the writers get to choose who it is? So I guess just what's the vetting process like for all these A-list creative teams that you keep landing?
So in general, when I look for an artist, you know, with Black Eyed Kids, artists, somebody who do mood, so you know, Simon, you know, was great for that. But for other projects, we just saw artists that, like, you know, what are their strong points, who the writer is, what's the story, you know, is this a sci-fi? Like, for instance, we used Replica as an example. We'll be doing that one with Paul Jenkins. And Andy Clark was recommended by Mike Martz. So Andy's somebody he had worked with at DC, who I wasn't really familiar with his work too much. But the series itself is so much like an old 2000 AD Judge Dredd, like when Brian Bolland was doing it, tongue in cheek, and also in a sci-fi humor and action. And Andy just, wow, nailed it. He was perfect for that job. Now with Rough Riders, for instance, Patrick Roloff, you know, because people might consider he's kind of old school. But when Mike suggested him for the book, and it'll be honest, he wasn't the first person we talked to about doing the book. The first person didn't really work out for one way or reason or another. But then when Patrick was offered, he came in, he was perfect for it as well. So we look for just people who, A, can tell a story, who are professional, who can, you know, turn a story in, and just who can, you know, the personalities don't conflict with the writers. They have to be able to get along, too. Because, you know, when people, you know, become friends and work on the book together, that's when the best books are done, because they're just off of each other, you know, making great comics.
Was it a conscientious choice for you guys? Because I know you guys don't do writing submissions, but you do accept artist submissions for the company. Was that always a conscious choice, or is that something that's just come about because you guys kind of know the type of writing that you want for the company?
Well, to start, you know, because we're still a young company, we only have X amount of, you know, space where we can do our project we want to publish. So again, we went and recruited the talent to launch us, which would be the talent you see today and the talent, you know, that's coming up shortly. We just don't have enough room to keep adding more and more. There's a lot of projects we've gotten that were saying, oh, that's really cool. We just can't do it now.
Right.
Or we're going back to my Caliber days, you know, one thing I do, always do at Caliber, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the anthology Negger Burn I did for a long time, which kind of made my career. But Negger Burn was a project, a series where I went and recruited, you know, the Brian Bolins and the Neil Gaimans and everybody to do the book to sell it. But the backbone of the book was the new guys who were coming in, like the, you know, well, number one had Mike Ringo and had Andrew Robinson's first, I think, published work ever was the cover to Negger Burn, number one. And it was one of Ringo's first. We had John Cassaday, you know, might have been his first published work in Negative Burn. You know, Brian Bendis, back when he was, you know, a writer and an artist, was in there a lot. And David Mack, you know, Phil Hester. You know, a bunch of other guys who, you know, got their start there and moved on and came bigger. But it was the young guys who were the backbones. And that's how I feel like Abstract will eventually become as well. Again, at the beginning, we have to sell the book, the company, and sell the books. So we need the established talent. But there's a few people, like a Marguerite was a guy that Mike brought in, highly recommended. A gal, Mike brought in, I think I said guy, didn't I?
You're fun.
Who brought in, who he thought was going to be a rising star. And I think he was right on and nailed it there. I think she's not only doing Insects with Us, but now doing Animosity, which has just blown up.
Yeah.
And the week it came out, which has been, you know, a phenomenal situation for us. And then people like, you know, Frank or Ray Fox and some guys who haven't had the big recognition yet, but definitely have the potential to be the next big stars.
Sure.
So that's it's the same thing. Like I said, it's the model I used at Caliber is the model we're kind of using here as well. So we'll have that opportunity for new writers. And, you know, it's easier for an artist to break in because the artist can just be tagged onto a sandwich writer. Mm-hmm. It's hard for a writer to break in because they have to sell the book.
Is Animosity now the highest selling title you guys have had?
I think probably after this week, if you ask me that question, I'll say yes. So,
well, congratulations! I saw the third printing announcement, so that's very cool to hear.
Oh yeah, I'm very curious how long that's going to last. So, I anticipate a fourth printing on the horizon.
Really? Wow.
Wow,
that's good. That's good. I mean, it's a fun book. It's a fun book, and it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different not only from what you guys do, and I think you guys do a really good job at tackling many different genres, which is nice because I don't want to be reading Capes and Cowls all the time, as much as I love them. Sure. But so that's nice. But even within like what you guys do, it's so different. And just from that first issue, like, you know, the direction of the book can be anything, which I always enjoy. Kind of guessing what's coming next, because sometimes, you know, you get tied, like really invested in the story, but you can kind of tell what the next issue is going to be.
Sure, sure.
That's not always fun, right?
I love listening to you guys when you talk about Black Eyed Kids, because I think last week you mentioned what you like about the book. One of you guys said is that after you read it, you don't just put it aside; you think about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I love listening to all your little guesses about. Here's what I think happened here. Here's what I think this. I like that because that's what I wanted to do. It reminds me when I used to watch, you know, when Lost was out and Battlestar Galactica, and I'll watch an episode and the fans would get so into it. I run after the episode and go to the message boards and say, what did I miss? Or what did you guys see? You know, I didn't communicate.
Yeah.
But I was just so into the possibilities of what really was happening.
Sure.
And that's what I hope Black Eyed Kids is doing. And that apparently you guys are going that direction, so I like that a lot.
Well, and the thing is, like, you know, coming from a Valiant community, like, that's kind of how it is, because that's such a tight-knit shared universe. Mm-hmm. And you guys aren't doing the shared universe, but, you know, the community's still small, and so it's very easy to get in a group and have a discussion. We do, like, a private Slack chat, too, and I know the guys on there are very excited about talking Aftershock. And that's one of the things, you know, like, it's nice to meet people with like mind. Back when, like, you guys were doing Calibur, like, there was none of that, right? Like, there was no internet, pretty much.
No, you're right.
So it was very hard to find mm-hmm. like-minded people to discuss and share these books. And now it's so easy. And I'm sure that helps you guys. Like, even the jerks who might say, you know, nasty things about a book, like, they're still talking about the book, right? And I think now there's so much more, I guess, visibility for everyone, where right. even as hard as it is to bring a new publisher on, it's also much easier to spread the message, you know?
I agree with you.
Yeah, and, you know, in addition to that, I think, and this might not be in your long-term business plan, but having the, what are you putting out, about 8 to 10 active titles right now? Does that sound about right?
Per month, yeah, I'll say that. We have some more in the works that we haven't scheduled yet. But
yeah,
that's it.
So it's nice because, like, if there's a group of people interested in Aftershock, you can sort of read everything without breaking the bank.
I think we want to keep it that way.
Are you okay? That's what I wanted to ask you. Is that like a target number of titles that you want to be publishing at a time? And
I don't think we sat down. I should say we'll only do this many, but. We want to keep it kind of compact. So I don't think we'll ever be, you know, a image company where we're doing, I don't know how many they do a month, 60.
Yeah,
at least,
like that.
Yeah.
I have no idea. So, yeah, it's, don't want to get that way. We'll make it work. Right. We build a community, and we get that point. And then, like you said, people won't be able to pick up all our titles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any big announcements coming up from you guys? I know you got Shipwreck coming out fairly soon.
Yeah.
That's Warren Ellis and Phil Hester, whom I love both of those guys, so I'm very excited for that. What's going to be the next... what's that?
Alters coming up next,
well, Alters
right?
is coming up next.
Yep.
Paul Jenkins.
That went to the printer this week.
Nice.
Awesome.
How's the reception been for that so far from distributors?
It's been very good.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with the numbers and stuff, so... I think it got a lot of attention, you know, and it got, you know, a lot of good press. You know, it got negative stuff as well, but that's to be expected. And but no, I think the turnout for it has been great, and I'm very, very interested to see what it does once it hits the stands. Because I think it appealed to a lot of people.
Yeah. Is there any? I'll step out on a limb here. Is there any new, I don't know, titles, creators, or something we can break the news on? Or maybe TV, movie plans, anything like that?
There are things.
I guess no is an acceptable answer.
I don't have permission to give you the
I had to at least try.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, there might be something breaking around New York Comic Con time.
Nice.
And as far as film and TV, there's always ongoing negotiations there as well, and a lot of interest in a lot of our titles. And I'd be happy to say Black Eyed Kids got a tremendous amount of interest, and so
that'd be a great one.
Yeah, and it could be a film or a TV show. I think it's a TV. One of my partners thinks it's a film, but we'll see. And I work out of a movie studio here in Atlanta, and so I think it'd be a great location to film the TV show.
Yeah.
See, that's perfect. Well, they do Walking Dead around that area anyway, so
yeah.
You know, you've got the infrastructure.
I was a zombie in Walking Dead the first
episode. No, you weren't.
Really?
Episodes 1 and 2.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You can see me in episode 1. You can never see me in episode 2, which kind of disappointed me because I was right next to the actors. I was right next to people getting shot in the head with blood splattering on me, and you never see me. And I'm like, what the heck?
Oh, that's amazing.
But the first episode, if I freeze frame it, I can show you where I'm at.
All right. I'll see if I can watch it tonight, frame by frame, and see if I can find it.
Yeah, but with the studio I'm at now, I know Fast Furious 8 just left. parts of Captain America 3 was filmed there. The Fifth Wave was filmed there.
Okay.
Mockingjay parts 1 and 2, huh. Insurgent, Allegiant. Several films too. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, Atlanta's kind of a hotbed for a lot of things right now. I was pretty surprised cuz I'm in South Carolina, so I'm not too far away. But like before a couple of years ago, like I didn't know there was so much going on there. I met Robert Venditti, for example, and I got to talking with him, and like there's a lot of writers in the area, a lot of artists, like movie stuff left and right. Yeah. Like it's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I took my daughters over to the Vampire Diaries set. One of my daughters to her friends because she's a huge fan of the Vampire Diaries. So I got to take her on the sets, which were pretty elaborate, which I was pretty impressed by them. So I made me dad for life, I guess.
Hey, Ronnie, do you have any questions for Joe? Or are you starstruck?
I'm just listening, gathering it all in.
We interrupted the podcast to bring you on, and you don't even have a question?
God. Oh, I didn't say I didn't have a question.
Oh, okay.
I should bring you three guys to the Black Eyed Kid's book, like the three, the Lone Gunman from X-Files.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. I'm not saying you'll survive.
Hey, that's cool. I'm good with dying. I'm good with dying. Well, you know, we were talking about this. I think it was last episode. Because Jack's got Jackpot, so he's happy with that.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, Martin was in The Revisionist, so I'm good with that. But now we need the Baron. So
I saw that. I saw that. The Baron. Okay, what's what we can do?
You can kill. He can be like a one panel guy and just kill him off.
That's gonna be the next Garth Ennis book, The Red Baron.
There we go.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I don't have anything else. I had one more question, but I don't want to ask it because I kind of know what happened. Want to know what happened to Lifespanners, but I don't know if you guys can talk about that or not.
I guess. Basically, we just need to change artists.
Okay.
And so reschedule it. So that's what it comes down to.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm a huge Tim Seeley fan, so.
Okay, yeah, it's a fun book. So we're looking probably, spring, I would guess.
That's cool. Next year. I'm sure he's busy over at DC anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely has that. So we're looking forward to getting it out. So hopefully it'll be worth the wait for everybody. I think it is.
That's awesome. Anybody else want to ask Joe anything before we wrap up?
I think I'm good.
Awesome.
I could ask probably questions the rest of the day, but...
Yeah, well, you know. I appreciate you taking the time on a Sunday, Joe. That's awesome of you.
I don't ever get days off, so...
I know the feeling.
I'm sitting here writing today, which is a day off for me. So that's I don't write on company time. I write on my own time, so...
Are you writing Black Eyed Kids?
Yeah, I'm writing Black Eyed Kids right now.
Cool.
I'm really happy with this one too.
You want to read a couple lines?
I'll give you some more quotes. I like how you guys. What was a couple of podcasts ago? You did the "They're Not Vampires."
Oh yeah, dude, that quote was amazing.
I answered the question that some people were asking if they were vampires.
The
last issue, it seemed like, there was four main scenes, and then every scene ended with some awesome Black Eyed Kid quote. I don't have it in front of me now, but was that by design?
Yeah, I just went to, I was ending a scene here with a Black Eyed Kid quote today. And I've rewritten it three times, so I want to make sure it's an awesome quote. I'm not sure if I'm still happy with it yet, so I'm going to have to change it again.
If I ever run into a real life Black Eyed Kid and he doesn't have some like witty comment to make, I'm going to be extremely disappointed.
Well, I think what I like to do is I miss having letter pages in the comics. Nobody ever sends letters anymore.
Yeah.
So I should do like a Black Eyed Kid's letters page and just ask people to send me letters or just comments, whatever, and I'll answer them in the voice of the Black Eyed Kid boy.
Oh,
King.
Wow,
that would be amazing.
Just be a smart ass to everybody's answers. And, I think that'd be a lot of fun. So I might do that.
You should definitely do that. We'll write in. All right, we'll let you go, Joe. Get back to writing. It's been a pleasure. Okay. We do appreciate it.
I appreciate having me on, and thanks for doing the podcast, and thanks for the kind words about Aftershock, and particularly my book. And you guys are really putting the pressure on me to keep performing at a high level, so challenge accepted. So hopefully liking it. And when I had the movie TV show nailed down the contract, I'll let you guys know.
Yes.
Awesome.
Now we're cooking.
It will happen.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
No problem. You guys take care.
Bye-bye. This has been Aftershock Central Podcast. Again, we want to thank Joe for hanging out. I hope you guys had fun. I know I had fun. Oh, yeah. I know Jack had fun. I don't know if Ronnie had fun. He's very quiet.
I was having fun hiding in the closet.
Dude, I'm telling you, if he writes you into Black Eyed Kids as a kid in the closet, I'm going to flip my lid.
I will lose it.
Anyways, you can find us all on Twitter. Jack is at Jack Sutherland. Ronnie's at Ronbar316. And I am at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And you can email us hello@nerdlegion.com. Until the next time. We lied to you. We apologize. We said we were reading Super Zero today, but we lied. We thought Joe was better.
Yeah, well, we might have read it. We just didn't discuss it.
Well, that's true. You all have a good night.
Ciao.